to John Swinfield's Big Business Podcast. And now, let me introduce your host, journalist and writer, John Swinfield.
Hello, I'm John Swinfield. Welcome to Big Business. I'm a journalist and television producer, and I've spent much of my life writing and making films about business bosses. I hope you find this pod gossipy, irreverent, informative, and even fun. If you like the feed, please don't forget to click the subscriber button. Big Business is on every week at 11 a.m. GMT on Wednesdays. William Hague, the one-time leader of the Conservative Party and a polished historian and author, has always seemed to me a reliable seer and prophet of where the nation's at and how it's progressing or otherwise. In October of 2021, in his column in The Times, he reminded me of something which was simply this. Great Britain is one of only three countries in the world which has produced more than 100 unicorn companies. That's businesses which are worth more than £1 billion each. Hague also mentioned that the UK has, of course, several of the world's top universities, and there are colossal amounts of money which are pouring into British technology start-up companies, far more than is being garnered, for instance, in Germany or in France. Hague's column set me thinking about one of my favourite businessmen who had recently died, the pioneering and imaginative Sir Clive Sinclair, who in 1961 set up Sinclair Electronics. I'd watched Clive's progress and setbacks over the decades. He was irascible, inventive, sometimes hot-tempered. For 17 years, he was the chairman of British Mensa, the club for those with an astonishingly high IQ. Though super bright, Clive wasn't overly geeky or an egghead, as some in high-tech can be, a common trait found in California's Silicon Valley. I'd known Clive since the late 70s. He was always lively and entertaining, his conversation engaging and informed, his voice deep and mellifluous. Clive invented the first pocket calculator, and he was instrumental and a world leader in making home computing a reality. His first computers were cheap and they were easy to use. In many ways, he could be called the creator of computing for every man. I recall a Geoffrey and Mary Archer summer party at their home in Grantchester near Cambridge, where the poet Rupert Brooke once lived, sipping champagne with Clive Sinclair and Michael Edwards, the South African boss of the ill-fated British Leyland. We talked of the UK's once magisterial car industry, humbled by a toxic cocktail of foreign competition, poor management, grasping unions, sparse investment, and a reluctance to embrace new designs, robotics and research. In Grantchester, I'd made an ITV dramatised documentary about Rupert Brooke, directing a naked actress in the role of one of the poet's lovers to frolic in Grantchester meadows before scampering off and flinging herself shrieking into the cold waters of the River Cam. Much more exciting than making films about widgets and industry. The day of the Archer party was sunny and hot. Clive had tied his handkerchief at four corners and wore it on his balding head as a sun shield. The diminutive Edwards was animated and excited, pint-sized and dapper in a tight-fitting cream suit. He was one of Margaret Thatcher's hero industrialists, though he'd actually been appointed to British Leyland by Labour's Harold Wilson. To trade unionists, Edwards was a poisonous dwarf. His South African accent made him sound as if he'd dropped in after shooting lions in the African veldt. The big, bruising, hard-line communist shop steward, Derek Robinson, with his foghorn, Brummy accent, and better known as Red Robbo, and little Edwards, the nasally South African, loathed one another. They had fought tooth and nail over the British Leyland cadaver, which Edwards managed to partially resuscitate by slashing its workforce and closing a third of its 55 industrial plants. It was quite difficult to hear what Clive Sinclair and Michael Edwards were saying, being drowned out by the nearby fruity-voiced thespian, Donald Sinden, holding court to a fawning coterie. The journalist John Preston once wrote of Sinden, "To hear him in full spate is not unlike being shot between the eyes by the world's largest plum." Early on at the party, I'd unintentionally upset Diana, Sinden's actress wife. She'd addressed me with a lordly, "And who are you? And what do you do?" I didn't have a clue who she was, and I tend to bridle when bossed around. So I responded accordingly. "And who are you? And what do you do?" I asked her. With that, she turned away, unamused. My wife later heard Donald telling Geoffrey that some awful man had asked his wife who she was, which my wife and I thought was hilarious. The Archers set at the party were a mixed bag. Geoffrey, a novelist and former Conservative MP, had just won £500,000 in damages in a court case involving Monica Coughlin, a prostitute. Later, the case came back to court, and Geoffrey was jailed for perjury. Geoffrey had been a guest on my TV interview show. At one point, he'd shown me the garden and the summer house at the old vicarage, and he'd invited me to his beautiful London flat, works of art at every turn. I'd spent an enjoyable evening at the Reform, my club, where I gave supper to Geoffrey's wife, Mary, an academic. We talked about everything from Rupert Brooke to solar power, in which she is an expert, and a future role that she was anticipating as the presenter of a TV science series. In fact, I was the first to suggest to my boss, the controller of programmes, that she ought to be auditioned for the role. At the Archers party, Clive Sinclair was in full swing. He'd become the people's champion of consumer electronics. His inventions were clever, creative, and affordable. Some said his stream of ideas was stronger than his ability to sell or market them, which was probably true. But in his case, it was also a story gleefully retailed by some of those who were embittered by his fame and fortune. Though, of course, it must be said that Britain has a forlorn record in exploiting its own products and ideas. They're too often stolen and plagiarised by overseas competitors. I had got to know Clive reasonably well, and I'd watched him at work on different inventions at various locations in and around Cambridge, which was becoming a hive of high-tech endeavour. In 1977, Clive came up with the Sinclair Risk Calculator. In 1982, he launched the groundbreaking, best-selling ZX Spectrum computer. In 1983, however, he had a commercial flop with the TV-80, a pocket television. He also created a tiny radio to be worn in the ear like a hearing aid. His ingenuity knew no boundaries. At his townhouse in London, Clive took me down a flight of stairs where a tiny swimming pool had been shoehorned into the basement. It was perfectly usable, and with its underwater lighting, shone like a pearl. The little swimming pool was a masterclass in miniaturization. He excelled at inventing minuscule creations with massive potential. Clive's hilarious falling out with Chris Curry became the stuff of legend. Chris had worked with Clive, but quit Sinclair to set up Acorn Computers with Herman Hauser. Hauser later blazing a considerable trail as a high-tech backer and investor. When the BBC chose the Acorn computer over Sinclair's Spectrum, and Acorn ran advertisements praising the virtues of its own machine, Clive marched into Cambridge's Baron of Beef pub, a favourite watering hole for software engineers, and began whacking Chris Curry with a rolled-up newspaper, much to the delight and the merriment of other imbibers. There was much pushing and shoving, though witnesses said no real blows were exchanged. It was more a case of friendly joshing with a competitive edge. The story of the Battle of the Baron of Beef, as it was inevitably dubbed, was given legs by Mike Geacock, a journalist, and the photographer Louis Garnet, who ran a news agency in Cambridge's Regent Street. The news agency was almost opposite a pub, whose back bar was the smoke-filled haunt of national newspaper reporters, their task being to cover Cambridge and the east of England. They were a clever, witty, and worldly coterie, whose number included Kevin Hunt of the Daily Mirror, David Thurlow of the Daily Express, and another old friend of mine, Roger Bushby of the Sun. Years before, Roger and I had been trainee reporters on a weekly paper, the Bedfordshire Times. This competitive circle, always ravenous for copy, guaranteed that a good story would receive prominence. Two of Britain's foremost computer scientists knocking six bells out of each other in a pub was most definitely a good story. In 1985, Clive produced something which again thrust him into the spotlight as Britain's best-known inventor, the Midget C5. At just 68 inches long and 29 inches wide, it was a tiny electric car with a top speed of 15 miles an hour. It was open-topped and so light that users said a strong breeze spelled danger. With its short range and a battery which quickly gave up the ghost, it was widely castigated by the press and public as being unreliable and unsafe. It's inarguable that it wasn't up to the job, though in terms of electric power, it was some three decades ahead of its time. In America, a commercial misfiring is seen as a blooding in, or part of the entrepreneurial lot, a necessary component of an apprenticeship. In the UK, though, it too often results in the snooty tag of failure. Moving on for a moment from Clive, but staying with Cambridge and its high-tech phenomena, in September of 2021, there came news of another remarkable coup for the area and its inventive environment, which Clive Sinclair knew so well. The Blackstone Investment Company, one of the largest and most powerful in America, is investing £850 million in Cambridge's high-tech sector. It's going to finance a new life sciences laboratory and a vast amount of new office space, something which is in desperately short supply in the city. Life sciences are on the edge of a new halcyon age, and some of it is based around the golden triangle of London, Cambridge, and Oxford, which are currently being linked by enhanced road and rail facilities. Life sciences are a crucially important sector in the economy, and they've been attracting record amounts of global investment. Life sciences, of course, are a different field to that in which Sinclair made his name, but they still demand, at least in part, persistence, creativity, and inventiveness, qualities which Clive had in abundance. As for Geoffrey Archer, well, he might have been to jail, but he remains exceedingly rich, with fine homes in Britain and overseas. He's still Lord Archer, and he's still knocking out bestsellers. Rubberball doesn't begin to describe him. You've been listening to Big Business. This is John Swinfield signing off. Don't forget to click on subscribe. I'm on every Wednesday at 11 a.m. GMT.